everyone. This is Lou Caravelli. You're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio program. Well, we got through Thanksgiving. I hope you all had a good time. I did. I miss Elizabeth, of course, but through some kindness from neighbors, had a good time and good church activities as well. Well, what's new today, aside from the Christmas season getting off to the big start? Here's a little article. This one is so new, it's just a couple hours old. If that, then I'm going to have to read it off the cell phone rather than have a printed copy. And it's from Fox News and says, Comer targets walls in new House investigation, citing nearly $1 billion. Yes, that's right. That's billion with a B. An alleged Minnesota fraud. And the subtitle says, federal prosecutors have so far charged roughly $300 million in alleged fraud connected to the nonprofit Feeding Our Future. This, as I said, was from Fox News by Michael Dorgan, published December 2nd, with the very day I'm recording this, December 2nd, 2025. And let's see now, what's it say here? And Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota, as many of us may have forgotten, was the candidate for vice president in the last presidential election just a year ago. Kind of forgettable. But the article says, the House Oversight Committee has opened a probe into Governor Tim Walz's handling of a massive relief program in Minnesota that federal prosecutors say devolved into the largest COVID-19 fraud scheme in the country. And here we have a quote from Chairman James Comer. He is chairman of one of the committees. Let me see now. Which committee? Probably says a little later, but anyway, the House Committee, House Oversight Committee, here we go, has opened a probe into Governor Tim Walz's handling. So that's the committee. And the quote from James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, who's the chairman of that committee, says, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz was warned about massive fraud in a pandemic food aid program for children. Yet, he failed to act, unquote. Instead, and this going on with Comer's quote, instead whistleblowers who raised concerns faced retaliation, Comer added. Because of Governor Walz's negligence, criminals, including Somali terrorists, stole nearly $1 billion from the program while children suffered. The House Oversight Committee will conduct a thorough investigation into Governor Walz's failure to safeguard taxpayer dollars, unquote. Comer's decision comes as the Treasury Department announced that it, too, is investigating the scandal and looking into whether Minnesota tax dollars were diverted to the terrorist organization Al-Shabaab. The Justice Department said approximately $300 million in taxpayer funds intended to feed low-income children during the pandemic was diverted through a nonprofit called Feeding Our Future, in a sprawling case that has grown to at least 78 defendants. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Minnesota said it was the largest pandemic relief fraud scheme charged to date in the U.S. Some of the organizations tied to the fraud were run by Somali Minnesotans, federal prosecutors say. And it goes on to give some more information. That will be something to watch in the days to come. Let's see now. Anything else I want to mention about that? This is a report, continuing with this same Fox News article, a report by the Manhattan Institute City Journal citing unnamed federal counterterrorism sources alleged that some of the stolen funds were transferred overseas to Somalia and may have ended up with Al-Shabaab. Though none of the federal indictments include terrorism charges, and the Justice Department has not confirmed any such link. All right, so Interesting. Well, now let's get into some other articles we have here. We have something to say about COVID, as we often do. But I believe we'll save that for later. But here's an environmental issue. This is from the Western Journal. The other one, by the way, was from Fox News on the day I'm recording this, December 2nd, 2025. This next one is from the Western Journal, entitled Playing God, Bill Gates Pushes Use of Sun-Dimming Technology at, quote, climate tipping point, unquote. This is by Michael Schwartz, December 1st, 2025. Heaven save us from billionaires who have a God complex. In an interview with Axios last month at Caltech, Microsoft founder Bill Gates, who frequently masquerades as a doctor or scientist, admitted that he has funded geoengineering research and that someday the world might need to deploy sun-dimming technology. Gates said that this deployment should occur only when the planet reaches what Axios called, quote, climate tipping points, unquote. In that event, Earth's inhabitants, quote, would need to reach for some other type of intervention, he said. Gates has funded Harvard's solar and geoengineering program, though much of his overall funding in that area remains undisclosed. And this is a quote from Gates. Yes, I've been a funder of trying to understand geoengineering, he told Axios. Mercifully, the multi-billionaire conceded that he does not envision the hypothetical deployment of sun-dimming technology as imminent. And this is another quote from Gates. No way am I pushing the world in that direction, Gates said, though he regards the research as potentially quite valuable. Of course, Axios added the obligatory caveat about how, quote, researchers need a clear understanding of the technology's potential effects, unquote. In truth, however, we already have that understanding. Sun dimming would likely involve injecting sulfuric acid particles, and this is a quote from Axios, again, injecting sulfuric acid particles into the upper atmosphere, mimicking the cooling effect of volcanic eruptions, unquote. Set aside for a moment the fact that climate change, at least as a planet-threatening phenomenon, amounts to a scam. Set aside, too, the fact that those who believe most fervently in climate change as an existential crisis already have authoritarian inclinations. Arrogance aside, what would compel scientists to try and mimic the effects of volcanic eruptions? After all, we already know how that works and what happens afterward. In April 1815, the violent eruption of Mount Tambora in Indonesia, the largest in recorded history, killed nearly 100,000 people. Volcanic ash lingered in the atmosphere for so long that contemporaries called 1816 the year without a summer. And I'll interrupt just for a minute. This is Lou. You may have heard Elizabeth, when she was still living, discuss that with me, that fabled year, 1816, year without a summer, when I believe that places in New England had frost in June, and that was the, at least a partial cause. Some other scientists believe that the effect of a lack of sunspots that year may have also had an effect. Back to the article. Meanwhile, 73-year-old founding father Thomas Jefferson made his usual assortment of scientific recordings, daily temperatures, rainfall amounts, etc. And here we have a quote from Jefferson. The great prices given for tobacco have produced great preparations for the present year, which, however, will be baffled by the weather, Jefferson wrote in May 1816. He went on to say that spring has been unusually dry and cold. Our average morning cold for the month of May and other years has been 63 degrees of Fahrenheit. In the present month, it has been to this day an average of 53 degrees, and one morning as low as 43. Repeated frosts have killed the early fruits, and the crops of tobacco and wheat will be poor. About the middle of April, they head to Quebec, snow a foot deep. Unquote. Those are the words of Thomas Jefferson, writings by him. 4 months later, Jefferson compared Virginia's summer to a, quote, moderate winter. He went on to say, we've had the most extraordinary year of drought and cold ever known in the history of America. In June, instead of 3 3/4 liters, I believe that's liters, our average of rain for that month, we had only 1/3 of an inch. Perhaps that should be IM for inches. So instead of 3 3/4, they had 1/3 of an inch. And that was in August. Now, take that back. That was in June. In August, instead of 9 1/6 inches, our average, we hit only 0.8 of an inch. So compare 9 1/6 to 0.8 of an inch. And it still continues. The summer, too, has been as cold as a moderate winter. Unquote. Words of Thomas Jefferson. And it goes on to describe some of the crops that had been way below the normal amounts. So back to the main part of the article. In other words, Gates and his ilk want to play with forces that 200 years ago resulted in food shortages. Without a shred of humility, they think they can set the planet's thermostat to an optimal temperature. Those of us who lived through the COVID nightmare must resolve never again to hand public policy over to the scientific establishment and its deep-pocketed enablers, such as Bill Gates. Good article from the Western Journal, dated December 1st, by Michael Schwartz. And the title was Playing God, Bill Gates Pushes Use of Sun-Dimming Technology at, quote, climate tipping point, unquote. All right, if you'd like to contact me here at the Divided Kingdom, you can just write Luke Caverly, LUCAVERLY, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Once again, that is Luke Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. If you didn't have a pen or pencil, I'll repeat that address later in the program. And Bethlehem is a tiny little community, but this time of year, Christmas time, we get a lot of people coming in to have their Christmas cards stamped with a neat little stamp for this town of Bethlehem that shows the wise men coming to worship the baby Jesus. Well, now, what else do we have? What should we do next? Well, this always recalls this time of year. Here's one at Walmart that may or may not affect you, but this was also from Fox News. Product sold at Walmart recalled due to risk of explosion. And the subtitle says, China window industry received 26 reports of Ozark Trail stoves exploding or catching fire. And this is by Daniela Genovese, Fox Business. National Retail Federation President and CEO Matt Shea joins Varney & Company to discuss the Black Friday shopping weekend, consumer trends, and experience, as well as the integration of AI in the retail sector. Hundreds of thousands of outdoor camping stoves sold at Walmart are being recalled after several units reportedly exploded, causing second-degree burns. The Consumer Product Safety Commission, CPSC for short, warned in a notice published last week that the Ozark Trail Tabletop 1 Burner butane camp stoves could explode or catch fire, posing burn and fire hazards to consumers. About 201,000 products were included in the recall. Prior to the recall, the manufacturer, China Window Industry Company Limited, received 26 reports of the camping stoves exploding or catching fire, including 16 reports of injuries, including second-degree burns. The model number on the recalled item is BG2247A1. I'll repeat that in case you want to check with yours, but I think if you contact Walmart, they'll certainly know about this. But the model number on the recall item is BG, as in boy, girl, 2247A1. And the model number is printed on a gray label on the inside of the fuel compartment. The product is dark green with an orange Ozark Trail logo printed on the front, and it was sold nationwide, and online at Walmart's marketplace between March 2023 and October 2025. Consumers are instructed to, quote-unquote, immediately stop using the stoves and return the product to any Walmart retail store for a full refund, according to the recall. On the same day, the recall for the stoves was issued. The CPSC, that's Consumer Product Safety Commission, also issued a recall for 24,300 outdoor master children's and youth helmets. I believe these are bicycle helmets. Yes, that's it. The helmets sold on Amazon.com and Walmart.com were recalled because they violate the mandatory safety standard for bicycle helmets. So those are a couple things to keep in mind. And consumers, again, to stop using them immediately. All right. So those are a couple of practical things. And again, that was from Fox News. I don't have a date, but I believe it was December 1st. Somehow the date got left out of that one. Anyway, it's very close to December 1st. All right, here's one for the New York Post. Portland, that is Portland, Oregon. I think of Portland, Maine, but in this case it's Portland, Oregon. Portland's woke tree lighting ceremony sparks outrage. Quote, they can't even say Christmas tree, unquote. This is by Richard Paulina, again, New York Post, December 1st, 2025. Portland has sparked outrage after stripping its Christmas tree of its name, referring it to only as the tree during its lighting ceremony. As thousands gathered in Pioneer Courthouse Square for the Oregon City's 41st annual tree lighting on Friday night, leaders and speakers avoided mentioning Christmas at any point, including in the ceremony itself in the event's ads. The festive occasion was kicked off with a woman from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs thanking everyone in the crowd for coming out on Native American Heritage Day. And it shows a photograph, and the caption on the photograph says, one of the speakers at the tree lighting ceremony was seen holding a Palestinian flag and leading the crowd in a Free Palestine chant. And this lady, who was from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, introduced two younger members of the tribe who referred to the celebration only as the tree lighting, before handing the microphone to another featured speaker. Quote, this is the perfect time to bring this up. There are a lot of genocides going on, she said only moments into the tree lighting ceremony. Can I get a Free Palestine? She asked, and some members of the crowd were heard obliging. She then led the crowd in the Strong Woman song, performing alongside two young children and another woman, noting that it, quote, felt appropriate since we're representing our matriarchs up here. Or is it matriarchs? And another photograph had the caption, she also led the crowd in the Strong Woman song, following the chant. And that was reported by KATU News, which I presume is that Portland Pod. Though the event seemed to lack the usual Christmas spirit that most U.S. cities embrace during the holiday season, the city made sure to trot out a Santa Claus, who posed with families and had a sing-along of holiday carols, which included Angels We Have Heard on High and Deck the Halls. Nearly an hour into the ceremony, Mayor Keith Wilson addressed the crowd and brought out Santa Claus and the city's representation before switching on the 10,000 bulbs on the 75-foot-tall tree. While the ceremony appeared to go off without any incident, it did garner some criticism online. One user wrote on X, quote, "They can't even say Christmas tree in Portland. They call it the tree." Another question, "Why does everything have to be so divisive?" And still another wrote, "It's a Christmas tree. It's always been a Christmas tree, and it will always be a Christmas tree." And finally, another user added, "Just saw a Christmas parade in Texas, and everyone was saying, Merry Christmas. God bless Texas." That was from the New York Post, December 1st, 2025. Portland's World Tree Lighting Ceremony sparks outrage. All right. As I've mentioned other weeks, we have some very dedicated listeners. One of them has been sending me some terrific... got a little cave in there of my materials. Bear with me for just one second while I rescue them. Yeah, sliding off. Got them. Okay. As I started to say, one of our intrepid listeners has been very faithfully for weeks and weeks and weeks sending some very interesting clippings, some from the New York Post, some from the Boston Herald, having to do with all kinds of things. Let me give you a little sampling. And, of course, the mayor of Boston, Mayor Michelle Wu, has been at the forefront of trying to keep Boston as a sanctuary city to protect the immigrants, whether they be illegal and whether they be criminal or law-abiding. So this is just a short article. This came from the Boston Herald. I don't have a date, but it was by Grace Zilkovich. And just to give you a couple paragraphs, the city of Boston moved to dismiss the federal government's lawsuit challenging its sanctuary city policy Monday, arguing the policy is constitutionally protected, and the U.S.'s lawsuit failed to show a conflict with federal law. And I guess that is called the Trust Act. Here we have a quote from the city's lawsuit, that is, "The Trust Act requires the Boston Police Department to prioritize criminal law enforcement while leaving civil immigration enforcement to federal officials," the lawsuit states. "This structure is not and could not be in conflict with or preempted by the Immigration and Nationality Act, which creates a system for voluntary state and local cooperation with the federal government. Not does the Trust Act regulate or discriminate against the federal government. Rather, the Trust Act is an exercise of Boston's authority protected by the 10th Amendment," unquote. Well, a lot of people do not see it that way. Let me see now. I went down, just getting a couple of selections from that. In September, Attorney General Pam Bondi called the city, quote, "among the worst sanctuary offenders in America." And she argued that the defendants, quote, "explicitly enforce policies designed to undermine law enforcement and protect illegal aliens from justice," unquote. And I think that's probably quite true. So we'll see how that works out in the courts, this lawsuit, but it certainly seems to me that Boston is in the wrong. What else do we have? Well, we've covered this pretty much earlier. The headline reads, and this is in the Metro edition, November 18th, 2025, we want answers. And I think I read some columnist, Miranda Devine's article a week or two ago about this strange guy, Thomas Crooks, and his his change. We're looking for another word, but we'll just say change from a perfectly normal young man in school to a killer, at least an attempted killer. Well, he did kill one man. And the subheadline says, Post, that is New York Post, says officials must reinvestigate failure to protect Donald Trump. Bizarre online life of Butler shooter revealed. And we had some articles on that. It just isn't time to read them all. I wish there was. Another subheadline says, Sniper's web footprint left violent clues. And it shows a few examples. But I think we'll have to leave it at that in the interest of time. What else do we have here? Well, here's one. Probe the FBI's failures. Why did the FBI either fail to track down major information about would-be Trump assassin Thomas Crooks, or fail to make it public? Indeed, shouldn't the Bureau have been aware of Crooks' alarming and visible social media profile long before he opened fire on President Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania, last year? The information Miranda Devine shared in Monday's Post, and this little small article was from Tuesday, November 18th, New York Post. Starting that paragraph again, the information Miranda Devine shared in Monday's Post directly contradicts public claims by then-security director Chris Wray that Crooks was a mystery man with a thin or non-existent online presence. The methods Devine, as Miranda Devine, Devine's source used, starting with Crooks' phone number to track down his accounts on YouTube, Snapchat, GroupMe, Discord, Quizlet, Chess.com, Google Play, and Quora, can't be alien to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. How could the feds miss the YouTube account TomCrooks2178, which showed to other users as Tom Crooks, that is, just Tom Crooks, two separate names, active from January 14, 2019, to its suspension on July 14, 2024, the day after Butler, meaning the assassination attempt. And it goes on to discuss some of the other things that we talked about last week. But I tell you what, if any of you have ever ordered something online, you probably have gotten all kinds of advertisements for similar items. Even quite a number of years ago, a minister I knew told us that one time he ordered a case of oil, and within days he got all these ads online for rebuilding engines. In other words, they had found out that he got all the oil, and probably that meant his engine was burning oil, since he bought so much oil, and therefore he was a good customer. Now, if they could do that perhaps 15 years ago, why couldn't the FBI have looked up the information on Trump's assassin, that many ordinary citizens easily looked up? It just doesn't quite make sense. But a lot of things don't make sense these days, do they? All right. Now, here's one from, the Boston Herald. again, I don't have a date, but I would assume it's within the last 2 weeks. This is by Joe Dwinell, I guess it's pronounced. 9/11 families push back at Saudi prince. As you may have heard in the news, or you've seen on TV, President Trump met with Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman in the Oval Office of the White House not long ago. And the article says, blaming only Osama bin Laden for the 9/11 terrorist attack, as families of the nearly 3,000 victims, saying Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman has taken the easy way out. Bin Salman said he felt, quote, pain about the families of 9/11 in America, unquote, during Tuesday's Oval Office meeting with President Donald Trump. The prince, however, did not address the lawsuit playing out against his country in a Manhattan federal court. Quote, Osama bin Laden used Saudi people in that event for one main purpose, to destroy this relationship, the prince said, adding it hurt tourism while helping extremism. That view, said 9/11 Justice President Brett Eagleson, can't go unchallenged. He went on to say, the Saudi crown prince is invoking Osama bin Laden does not change the fact that a federal judge in New York ruled a few short months ago that Saudi Arabia must stand trial for its role in the 9/11 terrorist attack that murdered our loved ones, said Eagleson. And that was Brett Eagleson. He went on to say, the facts found by the court point to overwhelming evidence of Saudi government support for the 9/11 plot and our nearly 25-year fight for justice, Eagleson added in a statement to the Boston Herald. He went on, while we recognize the value of a strong U.S.-Saudi relationship moving forward, it's imperative the Saudi government officials named at the court who conspired with the 9/11 hijackers be brought to justice in the United States. Or actually be brought to the United States to face justice, is the way it reads. All right, let's see now. Trump also jumped at the question over the Bin Salman's culpability in the 2018 killing of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi, with the president saying the prince, quote, knew nothing about it. And we can leave it at that. You don't have to embarrass our guest by asking a question like that, unquote. As the Herald reported Monday, the heart of the 9/11 lawsuit against the kingdom is the fact that of all the 19 hijackers, 15 were citizens of Saudi Arabia. They were all affiliated with Al-Qaeda and hijacked four jets, including two out of Boston. The thrust of Tuesday's meeting was to push for peace in the Middle East and promote investment in the U.S. The prince announced that Saudi Arabia was increasing its planned investment in the U.S. to $1 trillion. Well, that's another story that I don't think has ever been told yet, the full story of 9/11. We've got the official government story. Maybe much of it is true, but there are still questions in my mind what really happened. All right, let's see what else we have here. Border Patrol surge in New York City. Now, take that back to North Carolina. Leads to dozens of arrests by Sophia Terrine, Brian Witz, and Mary Claire Dale. This is from the Associated Press. And it appears in the Boston Herald, November 17, 2025. A top Border Patrol commander touted dozens of arrests in North Carolina's largest city on Sunday, as Charlotte residents reported encounters with federal immigration agents near churches, apartment complexes, and stores. The Trump administration has made the Democratic city of about 950,000 people its latest target for an imminent immigration enforcement surge. It says we'll combat crime, despite fierce objections from all the leaders, and downtrending crime rates, and so on and so forth. Well, we'll leave it at that. We'll hear much more about that, I'm sure, in the days and weeks to come. And this whole story in many states of what the Democratic leaders have failed to do in bringing illegal immigrants to justice, those that have committed crimes. Well, now I'm going to get back to some of the things that I got as I was doing a little research. Here's one from the Washington Times. A step backwards. Parents, senators wince at House bill to protect kids on social media. And this is Lou speaking. When I first saw that, I thought, well, why? A House bill to protect kids, that sounds awfully good to me. But I'll read it and let you decide. This is by Lindsay McPherson, as I said, the Washington Times, Thursday, November 27th, 2025. A newly released House bill to protect children online omits a key provision from the Senate version that sponsors and advocates argue is what gives the measure teeth against social media companies. The Kids Online Safety Act, or KOSA, COSA, passed the Senate last Congress in an overwhelming 91-3 vote, but it stalled in the House. Parent advocates are worried that the House will again be an obstacle after Republicans on the Energy and Commerce Committee released their version of the bill this week, which adds new language blocking states from enacting or enforcing any related laws. The House measure, labeled as a, quote, discussion draft, unquote, also excludes a, quote, duty of care, unquote, standard that's in the Senate version. The duty of care allows enforcement action to be brought against social media companies that fail to implement design standards to protect minors from specific harms such as violence and harassment. Here's a quote from Maureen Molak, a parent advocate from San Antonio. She told the Washington Times, quote, I just don't think that this draft, the way it's currently written, will force the platforms to make any meaningful changes, and it will preempt good laws that parents have fought for in their states, unquote. The House Energy and Commerce version of COSA is one of 19 bills related to protecting kids in the digital age that will be discussed at a Commerce subcommittee hearing on Tuesday. The Republican chairs of the full committee and subcommittee, Representatives Brett Guthrie of Kentucky and Gus Billy Rakes of Florida, called the hearing an important first step to enacting meaningful protections that can stand the test of time. And that last phrase was a quote. Last year, when the House marked up a different version of the bill and watered down the duty of care language, Mr. Billerakis said it was to ensure the law would survive court challenges. His office did not return a request for comment on the latest version. Ms. Molak, whose son David died by suicide at age 16 after he developed a social media and ongoing gaming addiction that led to relentless cyberbullying plans, she plans to attend the hearing along with other advocates from the parents for safe online spaces. The coalition of parents has used their personal stories of losing their children to online harms and lobbied for state and federal laws to protect other children. Ms. Molak, co-founder of the group, has been to Capitol Hill more than a dozen times to urge lawmakers to support COSA and advocate for the duty of care provision as central to the legislation. She said, quote, most, if not all, industries have some sort of a duty, a responsibility, to protect users or to protect people who are using their products. And this is the only industry that I know of that does not have any duty of care, unquote. Ms. Molak said the House draft is a step backwards and that she would like to see the Senate version passed or at least serve as a starting point for further negotiations. She pointed to recent court filings that unveiled communications from Meta employees acknowledging their platforms are addictive to children and teens as evidence of why the duty of care provision is needed. One Meta employee likened Instagram to a drug, and another responded, "We're basically pushers." That was a quote, "We're basically pushers." Both the Senate and House versions of COSA require social media companies to design controls for minors' accounts that limit algorithms and features that promote compulsive usage. They also force social media companies to default minors' accounts to the most stringent safety and privacy settings and give parents more tools to manage those settings and add time and purchase restrictions. I'll just interject as a former teacher, now retired. In those last few years, I would see students, particularly students of perhaps fifth grade through seventh, walking down the hall, and in those days, cell phones were allowed between classes. They would bump into each other because they weren't paying attention to where they were going. They were looking at the cell phones, many of them playing games on the cell phones. They may have been more harmless, although I don't know that for a fact. More harmless, I'm saying, than these social media chat boxes and things like that. Getting back to the article, the main difference between the two versions is that the Senate bill includes the duty of care provision to require social media companies to implement design standards to protect minors from specific harms and authorize the Federal Trade Commission to bring enforcement actions against companies that fail to do so. The specific harms named in the Senate duty of care provision include physical violence, sexual exploitation, suicidal behavior, depression and anxiety with clinically diagnosable symptoms related to compulsive usage, eating and substance abuse disorders, distribution of drugs and alcohol, deceptive financial practices, and online harassment activity that is so severe, pervasive, or objectively offensive that it impacts a major life activity of a minor. The House bill includes less strict language, requiring platforms to maintain policies to address threats of physical violence, sexual exploitation, and abuse, distribution of drugs and alcohol, and deceptive financial practices. Senator Marsha Blackburn, Tennessee Republican, and Richard Blumenthal, Connecticut Democrat, the lead co-sponsors of the Senate version, have emphasized the importance of maintaining the duty of care standard, and are not satisfied with the House version. Ms. Blackburn said it would, quote, not ensure big tech companies like Meta prioritize the safety of children over profit. And she said, I look forward to working with our colleagues in the House to pass a bill that requires big tech companies to take responsibility for protecting the next generation from groomers, pedophiles, drug dealers, and other criminals who view the virtual space as their playground, unquote. Again, that was a quote from Marsha Blackburn. And Richard Blumenthal, Connecticut Democrat, called the House draft an industry-authored betrayal of the parents and young people who have spent years demanding action from Congress. All right, that gives you the main ideas of this article. If you want to read the whole thing, it appeared in the Washington Times just a few days back, November 27th, by Lindsay McPherson. And I'll interrupt now to say, if you would like to correspond with me, you can write to me at Blue Cavalry, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. That's Blue Cavalry, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And be sure to check out our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. That's DividedKingdomRadio.com. If you miss a program, You can go to the archives and play any number of old programs. And there are other good features on the website. There's a tribute that I wrote to my late wife, Elizabeth. She has been gone now about 9.5 months. It'll soon be 10. And many of you have said how much you miss her. I certainly do, too. And I'm going to try to incorporate a suggestion from a good fellow Dennis, one of our faithful supporters, who said I ought to include some quotes from Elizabeth at the end of each program. I'm going to try and do that. I didn't have time to do it today, but I'm going to go back to some of our earlier programs and see if I can't include some of those. She had a lot of good things to say, as most of you, I think, already know. I don't need to tell you that. Okay. So, again, the website is DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com. The address, Blue Cavalry, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Now we have something from LifeSite News. And, of course, I should interrupt to say this concerns COVID. And I still have a few books. I sent out one just a couple of days ago to a person who wrote to me and said they'd like a copy of the book. You can do the same. They're free. If you can supply us with a little money to pay for the mailing costs, that would be a great help. Just write to me at that same address, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609, and just say you'd like the book. Its title is COVID and Coming Chaos. COVID and Coming Chaos. Elizabeth was largely the one who wrote it, but I did some of it too. I edited it and typed it, and I'm pretty proud of it. I know she was too. And although it was written a couple years back, it's still relevant because we still have articles about COVID. And here's one from LifeSite News. Trump FDA. Now, this is not Trump himself, mind you. This is the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. Trump FDA says COVID shots killed at least 10 children, and it promises new vaccine safeguards. The subheading, the subtitle, says FDA Chief Medical Officer Vinay Prasad slammed the Biden administration for pushing the COVID shots to healthy children who were coerced, that's their word, coerced, to receive the injections even though they, quote, could result in death. This article again is from LifeSite News by Emily Mangiaracina, Saturday, November 29th, 2025. At least 10 children have died because of the COVID shots, according to a recently published email from Trump Food and Drug Administration, FDA, officials. And this is a quote, at least 10 children have died after and because of receiving COVID-19 vaccination. Those are the words of FDA Chief Medical Officer Vinay, V-I-N-A-Y, Prasad, P-R-A-S-A-D. He wrote that on Friday in an email to staff obtained by the Daily Caller. And he went on to say in the memo, this is a profound revelation. For the first time, the U.S. FDA will acknowledge that COVID-19 vaccines have killed American children, unquote. The finding corroborates that of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, which recently linked at least 25 pediatric deaths to the COVID shot via information from the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS. Both counts likely significantly underestimate the real number of pediatric deaths from the shots, considering that studies have found vaccine injuries have been seriously underreported to VAERS. That's V-A-E-R-S. And again, this is information we included in our book, Elizabeth and I. So I'd urge you to get that book while there's still a few left. I don't think I'll be able to order more when these are gone, but I think we probably have at least 10. So it'll be a first come, first serve if you'd like to get a copy. Again, write me, Blue Cavalry, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Going on with the article, in his Friday memo, Prasad ripped the Biden administration for pressuring the injection of these experimental mRNA shots into children. Prasad wrote, quote, healthy young children who face tremendously low risk of death were coerced at the behest of the Biden administration via school and work mandates to receive a vaccine that could result in death. And he goes on to say, in many cases, such mandates were harmful. It is difficult to read cases where kids ages 7 to 16 may be dead as a result of COVID vaccines, unquote. The disturbing admission by the Trump administration's health agency highlights the silence of the Biden administration about these deaths and raises further questions about its integrity or lack thereof. And Prasad went on to write, quote, why did it take until 2025 to perform this analysis and take necessary further actions? Deaths were reported between 2021 and 2024 and ignored for years, wrote Prasad. He acknowledged that the vaccines potentially killed more children on balance, considering that they had virtually no risk of dying from COVID. He wrote, the truth is we do not know if we saved lives on balance. It is horrifying to consider that the U.S. vaccine regulation, including our actions, may have harmed more children than we saved. This requires humility and introspection, unquote. And let me skip down. Our time is getting short now. This year, the CDC removed COVID shots from its recommended vaccines for healthy children. Interesting there that they do put the word vaccines in quotes, as we often have, because they're not a traditional vaccine. A traditional vaccine prevented a disease. When you got the polio shot, you didn't get polio. I had the polio shot. I also had the polio oral vaccine taken by mouth. And obviously, I never got polio. The incidence of polio went down dramatically after those vaccines, but they prevented the disease. And since COVID didn't prevent, that is, the COVID vaccine didn't prevent you from getting COVID, the authorities had to change the definition. That's why they put the word vaccines in quotes, because they're not the traditional vaccine as we always understood it. So, going on now, this year the CDC removed COVID shots from the recommended vaccines for healthy children. The CDC panel had voted in 2022 to add the COVID shots to the childhood immunization schedule, despite their experimental nature and the fact that they were produced in a fraction of the time ordinarily required to bring a vaccine to market. And our book talks about that. When something is done hastily, without proper testing, you can't help but think it doesn't measure up. All right, let's see. Just to read a couple more paragraphs here, the push for COVID shots for children was spearheaded, at least in part, by CBER Director Peter Marks, who pushed for full approval of the COVID shots, even for the young and healthy, and laid the foundation for COVID shot mandates. A large growing body of evidence shows that the mRNA shots were dangerous to human health in a wide variety of ways and caused deaths at a rate far exceeding usual safety standards for vaccines, as Dr. Mary Talley Bowden, an ear, nose, and throat specialist in Houston, explained to Tucker Carlson in April. Normally, the FDA will put a black box warning on a medication if there have been 5 deaths. They will pull it off the market if there have been 50. Well, according to VAERS, again, that's the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, and it's vastly underreported, which I have seen firsthand, there have been 38,000 deaths from these COVID shots. And as I just read, they would normally pull the vaccine if there were 50 deaths. How does that compare? 38,000? Should have pulled it if there had just been 50. That number has since increased according to VAERS, which now reports 38,773 deaths, 221,257 hospitalizations, 22,362 heart attacks, and 29,012 cases of myocarditis and pericarditis due to the COVID shot as of August 29th, among other ailments. So again, COVID is not totally out of the news, or at least the effects of the COVID shots are not out of the news. We saw a lot of this in that book of ours. Again, I'll give you that at the risk of sounding repetitive. You can write for our book, just say, please send me your book. That's all you need to write. To Lou Caverly, Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And we just have enough time to give some of the highlights from this article that's been in the news all this past week. From the Washington Times, suspect in Guardsman shooting may have been radicalized after settling in the U.S., Trump officials say. Security Chief Kristi Noem blames Biden for poor vetting as Democrats warn of overly broad crackdown. Tom Howell Jr. was the author, Washington Times, Sunday, November 30th, 2025. Top Trump administration officials said Sunday that the Afghan refugee accused of shooting two National Guard members before Thanksgiving, in the nation's capital, likely had been radicalized in the U.S. after entering the country in 2021. Well, I'll probably read some more of that next week, and we may have some updates. That's an ongoing story, of course. One of those guardsmen has died, a young lady, sad to say. And we will know more as time goes on. Well, thank you for listening. Go to the website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. We're on every Thursday night, WWCR.com, or the shortwave, 4.840 megahertz. And Saturday mornings, you can hear the repeat. Go to our website if you need to get the frequencies. Thank you for listening, and good night.